Hello and welcome to this very sleepy episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games and... That's my sleeping noise. Did you like that?
Yeah, it was great.
It's really good. You're joined by myself, Tom Brewster, and Emily.
Hello. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm full of energy. You need to stop bringing the podcast down. This is one of the most energetic board game podcasts in the world, Tom. Shut up.
Oh my goodness. Okay, fine. On this podcast, we're going to talk about some board games.
Hell yeah.
Baby.
Hell yeah, Tom. Yeah.
I actually do feel slightly more energetic just by doing this. We're going to talk about two board games on this podcast. Just two. And then a third one at the end, but only for a little bit. We're going to talk about Mlem Space Agency. Am I saying Mlem right? Or should I be pronouncing it M-L-E-M?
I wish it were M-L-E-M. Because that would be like my name, but with an M at the end. And that would have made me very happy.
That'd be synergistic with your real life name. And we're going to talk about Kutnahora, the City of Silver. A CGE game that looks on its surface to just be a standard Euro game, but then under the surface, it's got a bit of spice, a bit of oddness going on. Am I making this sound exciting?
You are. I was hoping you were going to say, and under the surface, it is a basic Euro game, but that's fine.
I mean, that is also kind of true. And then right at the end, if we've got time, we're going to have a little chat about Dune Imperium and Dune Imperium Uprising, a game that we have covered extensively recently in a big chunky video review and that Emily has never played and does not know anything about because she's outside of the Duneverse.
Isn't that amazing that we would do that? Why would you have me on the show and talk about this? I don't know. This is Tom's decision.
It's mostly just an opportunity for me to talk more at someone about Dune because people in my life don't want to listen anymore. So you are now that person. And
sacrifice.
So is the audience.
I am the sacrifice.
There we go. That's enough to put a sting in and lead us right into Pod Town.
I think I nailed that. The sacrifice.
Yeah, you nailed it. You did. You killed it. Whoa. Emily, you've been playing a whole bunch of Mlem Space Agency, a 2023 game designed by Rainer Knizia, published by Rebel Studios with art by Joanna Rzbecka. What is this game? Because I've seen people talking about it. I've seen that it has a really long neoprene mat. And I've also seen that it's covered in, you know, sort of cute cats. And I don't know if I like the fact that it's got cute cats on it and that it's called Mlem. That makes me cringe.
Do you think they're cute?
Yeah, I think that they're not my definition of cute, but they might be someone's definition of cute. They're a little strange, although I do like one of the ones on the front cover.
The little chubby one that cooks?
The one with the spatula?
Yeah, what a cutie.
he seems like a cool guy.
I love them. Well, apparently I'm becoming the correspondent for Animals in Space games. I talked about apiary,
Which
is bees in space, and now I'm talking about cats in space, Tom. It's cats in space.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good niche for you to cover. Like any game that has got animals and also space.
It sounds like
we know
I'm
who to call.
Rarely going to get on the podcast. How often are they going to come out? 5 years time. Bring Emily back. Now we've got turtles in space.
I would play the living daylights out of. Oh, wait, hold on. That's just Twilight Imperium. Ha 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 ha. You know, that's got space turtles in it. Tell us about Mlem Space Agency.
Cats, right? They've taken over the world. It says in 2075, they've taken over the world. I don't know if the animals, like, I don't know if the humans are dead. I don't know if we've been domesticated.
Oh my god.
But they've taken over.
Yeah.
And now they're going into space, Tom. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
It's like ground control to Major Tom, but instead of you, it's like Tom from Tom and Jerry because it's cats. That's a good joke. Leave that in. So this is a push-your-luck game. Apparently, it's similar to Celestia, which I haven't played. But if you've played it, apparently it's like that, but a little more complicated. And I'll get into that. There's a spaceship, and you all have eight cats, and you're going to be putting your cats onto this spaceship. So every round, the person whose cat's at the top of the ship, they're the commander. And they have control over the ship, and they're going to be doing the push-your-luck portion of it. Wherever the ship is, you'll be rolling dice, and those dice will determine how far your ship will progress, or whether it will crash.
Gotcha.
And then you all die.
Oh.
No, the cats actually live.
Oh, well.
The cats live. They like, I guess because they land on their feet or whatever.
Right. In space?
In space. They land on their feet.
That's a,
always.
That is an interesting, you know, like when they talk about that idea that like, you know, bread always lands butter side down and cats always land on their feet. So if you put a piece of bread with the butter facing up on a cat's back and drop it, it'll spin forever.
Well, I'm going to go to the Empire State Building right now, a cat and bread in hand. And I'll report back next time. So for every space that your ship can go on, there are dice possibilities for that space, right? And it goes from one mm-hmm. to four, and then there's also an afterburner. So I think it's the two gets twice on the dice. So it's like one, two, two,
sure.
three, four, afterburner. So say that the space that you're on, it has an afterburner and a two. Right, as the two mm-hmm. possible dice rolls. You roll your dice, and every afterburner you have and every two that you have, you can apply that to your ship, and it will go as far as the number that you've got. But you don't have to use all the dice that apply. You'll essentially like group them. So you'll group your afterburners, you'll group your twos, and then you can either use the afterburners, or you can use the twos, or you can use all of both group, right? But you have to use all of what it, like each category.
Uh-huh.
If you decide to use the twos, you have to use all the twos. If there are two twos, you'll move forward four spaces. But if you roll and you don't get any of the numbers that are indicated, you crash. All of your cats will go back to your board. They'll land on their feet, and then you'll move the I don't know what it's called exactly, the little crash marker. You'll move that up one.
And does that trigger the end of the game when it gets to a certain point?
Yeah, and what number would you expect it to go to? For a game about cats, when they crash and they're, how many times do you think they can crash and die? How many lives
might these cats actually had? I'm going to say 11.
Yeah, apparently it's 11. I thought that was so strange.
That is strange.
Isn't that
That's
weird?
Very, that does seem very particular. I mean, is there some, you know, maybe they played it at 9 and they were like, you know what, this is, you know, they were saying this game, it's a 7.5. We make this track 11 and we're getting all the way up to an 8 out of 10. We're getting 0.5 full points by swerving the thematically correct answer to how long this track should be.
Yeah, and like, you know, they just put astronauts. They don't put catstronauts. It's like, what the hell? What are you, you're...
What was going on?
What were you doing? What's even the point of this anymore?
This is definitely further evidence of Reiner Knizia Games being mechanics first, theme second. Because all of the illustration and art in this is really nice. Like, I can see these pictures on Board Game Geek and, like, the little trinkets that you're collecting. I don't know how you get them, but, like, it seems like there's, like, a little cat treat on a string is one of the treats. And, like, one of the planets is, like, a fishbowl full of goldfish and one of them is a big yarn ball. Like, that's cute. In a way.
I love the idea of, like, because it's saying that it's grounded in the real world. Like, they overtook us in 2075, and then somehow the planets all, like, shifted into cat-related things. I love that.
Yes.
It's almost like they're predicting what's out there, and they're just talking about, like, things that they know. And they're like, oh, Jupiter looks like a big cat scratcher.
That's quite... That is a nice idea. And then I want the sequel game where the cats of Malem are bitterly disappointed to find out that Jupiter is, in fact, mostly just gas.
Yeah.
So if you crash the ship, like, you're the captain, you're rolling the dice, you crash the ship, that, like, you know, quote-unquote, kills all the cats on board, including yourself, presumably, right?
Yeah.
So is there a way, if you don't like where the ship is going, presumably you can get off early?
Yeah, this is the whole game. I probably should have said this earlier instead of going on 1,000 tangents. So as you're progressing along the track, the luck won't be on your side, you know? It's a press your luck game. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you think that dice roll won't go the way that you want it to in the future, you're getting a little antsy. You can jump off to either, like, if the space is next to moons, you can jump off to a moon. If it's next to a planet, you can jump off to the planet. The moons are, like, solid points. When you're on a moon, you just get the points that are on that. But the planets are, like, majority. So whoever has the most on that planet, they'll get the big points. So it's this push your luck game where if you're the captain, you're trying to navigate, like, as far as you can, like, while you're in control, and that's fun. And if you're any of the other players and you're not liking how that's going, you want to jump ship. Or if they've jumped ship, you take over. But Here's where it's interesting, Tom. This is very interesting to me. It kind of sounds like there's very little decisions to make, right?
Sure.
Unless you're like the captain of the ship. But one of the main decisions you can make is what cat you are going to put on the ship. So you have 8 cats, and they all have a little special ability. So when to use which, like, cat for which ability, because once they're on a moon or a planet, you can't use them anymore.
Gotcha.
So it's like when to use it and like when to take advantage of them. That's fun and that's cool. And so there are ones that are like, you'll get double points if it's on a moon, or you'll get double points if it's on a planet. Or there's ones like one with a parachute where if the ship explodes, then you'll automatically go to whatever space that's on. So you can be a little more risky if you've played that cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I found that very fun. I think that's very cool.
And so presumably as the captain or even as another passenger, you can look at the other abilities of the cats on board the ship currently, and you can get a sort of temperature of where people want to end up or where they want to go.
Very
And you
much
can make
so.
Decisions according to that. Oh, that's cool. I like that. I think that's an interesting little twist to that kind of thing. Because if I remember correctly, and I have not played this game, so this is incredibly foggy for me, but Celestia, the game that people have, by the sounds of things, been comparing this to, is a similar game of being like, you know, you move between these different places and maybe you stay or maybe you leave, but it does not have that level of like player power or intent. And this could be completely wrong. Yell at us or yell at me specifically in the comments if this isn't the case. But having that ability to, you know, have a guess at what your opponents slash comrades might be trying to do, rather than just basing it on pure vibes, does sound kind of interesting. I like the idea of this, despite not being into cats particularly. I do like cats, actually. Yeah. I don't know why I said that. I'm a fan. I just don't like cute games broadly.
Do you not?
Does this delight you?
This game in particular. I don't find this game all that cute. I mean, I find the components and everything cute. I don't find the art particularly that cute. But I do love cute games.
You don't find the cats themselves?
No, not really. But cute games are... Why would you not like them?
I think it depends on what kind of cute it is. Like, if it's... Like, the art in Fort, for example.
I love it.
Yeah. That art is, like, exactly my kind of cute.
Don't you dare say anything bad about it.
No. I would never. I think the art in that game is, like, the good kind of cute. Whereas I feel like... Maybe, like, Calico is a good example of, like, a sort of... I mean, actually, I like Calico. It's kind of a cozy rather than cute. I guess I just don't like things that are, like, trying too hard to be, like... It's adorable. And I don't like words like doggo, for example.
Yeah. You don't like words like malem.
Maybe I do not like words like malem, yeah. So that kind of stuff will always be a little bit of a turnoff for me. But is... Okay, here's the time to hit... time to do the official... Shut up and sit down. Shut up and sit down verdict time. Is it a good game, Emily?
Yes, I like it. Can we put in claps? Can we put in a crowd cheering?
Yeah, we can do some applause right now. Right now, you're basking in it. The crowd, they're loving it.
Oh, thank
they're,
you. Of roses, yeah. Unnecessary. Thank you so much.
you're just being, it's just overwhelming how much love is coming from our live studio audience. I'm glad that it's good.
Yes. So what I find like really fun about, I mean, I just like push your luck a lot in general. I like it a lot.
It's a good mechanic.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. If I ever like dip my toe into gambling, I think I'd have a problem. it's very fun. There's just like so much joy in, you know, being in a terrible situation. You've got like one dice left. There's something that I didn't say, but the afterburners, if you use them, you keep them. Whereas the other dice, when you use them, they're gone.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're running out of dice as you go along. So you're getting like less and less likely to roll these numbers. And then people are like, no, I'm going to jump ship. And you're like, no, I'm going to stay on this ship. I'm going to make it to the end. Because when you get to the end, you get to like ride a comet and you get like 7 points, whereas every other sucker's getting 2. And you're like, I'm going to get there.
Yes.
Against all odds. And then most of the time you crash, and that's a horrible experience, and you look like a doofus. But when it works, oh my gosh, what a thrill, Tom! What a thrill! There's literally very little better.
does this, I'm trying to think of other push-a-luck games that do, because I think that there is something nice about the, not only is it a push-a-luck game, you know, because often in push-a-luck games, you're watching someone else push their luck, and then you collectively cheer or scream or whatever when they push too far, or you curse them when they've done something really good. I feel like there's this new pocket of push-a-luck games that I really enjoy, which is where, like, one player pushes everyone's luck. My Goldmine is a recent example of this. It's like a small push-a-luck game from Cosmos Games where you are flipping cards from the top of a deck that affects all players, not just you. And Diamant is kind of similar, but players always have the opportunity to leave, so you are only ever pushing your own personal luck by continuing to go on. And I think there's something special about that, you know, making that kind of, like, risky maneuver a more, like, universal thing rather than just something that one player is experiencing at any given time.
Yeah.
It seems cool.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And also, like, planets, as I said, it's majority. So you can pop as many cats onto there as possible. But the moons, like, once there's a cat on it, you can't go onto that moon anymore. So as the game's progressing, because the game will end once somebody has all eight of their cats, like, occupying somewhere, or the spaceship's crashed 11 times. So as the game's going along, like, all of these spaces are getting occupied. And it's, like, kind of interesting because there's not, like, as you're progressing up the track, there is, like, you're getting higher points as you go along, obviously. Like, the better you push your luck, the more points you're going to get. But it's not, like, so drastic of a change to where it seems, like, kind of enticing to go for a moon early or something, like, and just occupy that space so that other people can't get there. So there's, like, less chances for people to jump
off. Yeah, I guess once you start occupying those lower spaces, by necessity, people need to start pushing their luck to get any points at all, rather than relying on safe options lower down. This seems cool. I mean, I expect this kind of, you know, like, quite simple, clean, but ultimately pretty good design from Radek Nitsia. I think that, like, I'm looking at this and thinking that, like, is it a game that is, and this is going to sound, like, maybe a little too clinical and nasty, but, like, is it an experience worthy of, like, the box size and a giant neoprene mat? Like, it seems like this is the kind of experience that is, like, a pub game for me. It's what I would classify as a pub game. Super easy to teach, a little bit raucous, a little bit loud, you know, a little bit silly. And it comes in a box that is, like, you know, it's like a full game box. It's like a standard board game size box, right?
Yeah, I can see that. Because now that you've mentioned that, it's like, it feels like it could very easily be something of, like, of, what's it called? The Oink game one with the, where you're, like, diving.
Oh, Deep Sea Adventure?
Yeah, Deep Sea Adventure.
We're famously Deep Sea Adventure haters over here.
yeah, I don't mind it so much. Yeah, it seems like something that could easily be shrunk down to the size of, like, Deep Sea Adventure. But
that makes sense.
These oh gosh, the components are really nice though. and I have seen it in the shops, and I'm like, it doesn't seem particularly that expensive. Like, I get it. I get that, like, if you want to bring it to the pub or whatever, that's a problem. But I don't know if everything that you get in it, it doesn't seem that bad. I don't know, Tom. I quite like it. And you're trying to turn me against it. That makes me feel
kind of bad
about myself.
Your earnest joy at Malem Space Agency should not go punished.
And every time you say the name, I regret it. I don't want to be an advocate for Malem.
You take it down by 0.1.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe I don't want to be standing so firmly for it.
Next up on the podcast, after Emily's light, breezy, joyous push-a-luck game, we're going to get crunchy and boring.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm so sorry, listeners to the podcast. We're going to Kutnahora, the City of Silver.
Woo!
This is the latest game from CGE, purveyors of weird and fringe and odd games all around. They're best known for stuff like Galaxy Trucker, Dungeon Lords, Dungeon Pets, Alchemists, recently Deal with the Devil. And here they are with what appears to be kind of quite a dry and boring Euro game. This big box that's covered in iconography and numbers. I'm freaking out. I don't know what this is, CGE. You had me thinking that you were going to make weird games. The secret sauce of Kutnahora is that it is a little bit weird right at the end. This is a game designed by, and I'm really sorry, I'm going to mess up all of these Czech names, but I'm trying my best, Andrei Bistron, Peter Kaslava, Pavel Jaroš, and with art by a whole bunch of other Czech names that I'm not going to butcher. I'm so sorry. So largely, this is a pretty straightforward game about bringing Kutná Hora, the city of silver, into a new age of prosperity. It's a game about gathering resources, it's a game about building buildings, it's a game about using your actions efficiently. All, you know, big turn-ons
I'm
for fans
salivating.
Of spreadsheets. Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit to learn more about these numbers.
Nom, nom, nom.
Here's the twist, though. Here's the twist. You've got all these resources in this game, right? You've got, like, wood and meat and beer and all these things. But none of them, except for money, actually exist. None of them have, like, actual components. Everything is just done through the game's money, through the economy. If you need 4 wood to build a building, for example, you do not get 4 wood from the supply and then you build a building. You pay for that wood with your money. And the way that you know how much wood is going to cost you is by looking at these special cards in a special card holder that represent the market. You then look at those cards and you see that wood costs 4 money. So if you need 4 wood, you just spend 16 money to build that building. And this seems simple. It seems boring. It seems straightforward. But as you are building the town, you're creating both production and you're creating jobs that affect the supply and demand of all the resources in the game. So what this means practically is that in the game that I played, in this 2-player game, we were building stuff constantly. We're building buildings all the time. And all the buildings required wood, which then meant that wood became very scarce, which then meant that it was really expensive, which then meant that when we were trying to build buildings, they would just like cost us so much money. And the wrinkle here is that only certain players can actually build each kind of building to produce each kind of resource. So in the game that I played, my opponent was the one who had the ability to build the wood buildings in the first place, and he just refused to do it for the whole game because he knew that I needed wood to build stuff to get my strategy to sort of lift off the ground.
That is so
and so
cool.
I had to pay through the nose to get anything built, right? And
that's
so while I was doing that, paying... It's so cruel. While I was doing that, paying like 9, you know, money per wood per turn, like building these buildings cost 6 wood. And they so that was 9 money per wood. So that's like, I can't even do maths. That's so much money. He was just going down the mines and doing this sort of separate thing, which he didn't require as much wood, and also was creating more demand for wood at the same time. So I had to just keep, you know, wood just became more and more and more expensive for me over the course of the game.
Natural born capitalist, that boy.
I know, exactly. But then the flip side to that, right, the thing that was then interesting is that because he then went down the mines, he created jobs, which then meant demand for the beer that I was making then started to go up. Oh. So then I could sell that beer to make more money than I ever needed so that the high cost of wood didn't actually really matter to me because I was just making like absolutely scads of cash.
That's so interesting.
That's right. It looks like you look at this game on the surface and you're like, yeah, I see buildings, I see tiles, I see like money. And you're like, okay, I know how this works. But that like hook of this like fluctuating market, it pushes you towards making decisions for the market that like exists in the game right now, rather than the one that you like want to exist, if that makes sense. It's kind of similar to Brass in that way, right? Like Brass Birmingham has these constant opportunities to be like, well, my ultimate strategy is to build, I don't know, pottery buildings, but right now iron is worth loads of money, so I'll make an iron mine and then I'll sell all that and get a big explosion of cash right now. It has a lot of that in it. So I've been talking for a while now, but I should explain just like the rough like flow of the game outside of this like resource market. And the good news is that it's actually really simple, which means that it's easy to engage with like the complicated market stuff because the actual like turn by turn is quite quick. On your turn, you have a hand of cards. You have 6 cards in your hand and you'll play 2 cards from that hand. Each card gives you access to some different actions. They're sort of like these scout style double cards with a different bottom half and a top half. So you have to choose which action you want. But you'll also bin something at the same time. So it's always an important consideration. a quick note here is that a lot of the actions have that classic CG approach to administration and bureaucracy to them. Like, to build a building in this game, which is what you're going to be doing all the time, you have to take three separate actions. You have to secure the rights to that building, you have to secure the plot of land, and only then can you actually build something, which is like games like Deal with the Devil that have this like bureaucratic edge to them. This is just as present in that game, which is delightful. And there's only other three other actions outside of like getting the blueprint for a building, securing and building. You have mining, which lets you extend this mine. It's like a little area control game. You have income that gets you cash for everything that you've built. And working out when to time your income is always this very interesting puzzle. Like, it's not a game where you just get like a set amount of income at the end of a round. You can sort of flexibly do it at any point in your turn. Always an interesting consideration. And there's the St. Barbara's action that lets you build out this cathedral that gives you little bonuses for building it. But obviously other people are going to have their eyes on that bonus, so timing that to the right time is important too. That's a really like hastily explained chat about Kutnahora, and I do really want to play this again. I came away from this being quite pleasantly surprised by how much I liked it, considering that I saw it at Essen and I didn't stop to like demo it because I looked at it and went, oh yeah, it's a Euro game, whatever. And I should have had faith, Emily. I should have had faith in CG putting a little spin on things here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because you know, you put out that video on, what was it, Gollum? It was Gollum, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, where you were like, Euro games, they're pretty normal, mid. They're pretty mid.
Yeah, I think that's what I said in the video. I was like, all Euro games are mid. Well, and, like, you know, the board game community was surprisingly fine with
that. They were so fine with that. You were celebrated. But this is not one of those. This is not a mid game.
I think this is a little bit more, it's got a little bit of sauce to it. It's a little bit more exciting than your standard thing. I still don't know whether it's the kind of thing that would push like something really solid out of my collection, because I feel like there's only a few slots in my shelves for like really like just solid Euro games. And this has that like odd little spritz to it, but I don't know how much longevity it would have. I do really want to play it again at a different player count, because at two, because players can only build certain kinds of buildings, like I could only build, you know, three different kinds and my opponent can only build three different kinds, there was no overlap. And in larger player counts, there's probably more of a scramble to build the right building at the right time so you can capitalize on that like market madness.
How many possible buildings are there?
There's like a few different types. There's these different guilds. There's like, hold on, I'm looking at a picture now to work it out. I think there's a total of like six different resources, so there's six different kinds of buildings you can build.
So you like, and then there's all also of these, and then anyone added to it would overlap.
Exactly, and that would probably be quite a good thing, because I never felt like there's this way that when you build a building, like other buildings get more expensive, like they shuffle around in the market, and that never really became a factor. Like I could just sort of always pick up what I wanted when I wanted, which gave us a lot of control over that market aspect, which let us approach the weird stuff quicker. Like it let us get into these like very strange game states where like wood was ridiculously scarce. Oh, you know what? One thing that I really enjoyed about this game that I should spotlight that I thought was just such a wonderful moment was, you know how I was saying my opponent just refused to build any wood buildings for the whole game and I was getting increasingly frustrated? Mm-hmm. There was a moment where the town, like the game itself, got annoyed at him for not building any wood buildings.
Oh, okay.
Because this like market deck that you like kind of slowly like work your way through as you build more stuff, there's a point at which the price gets so high that the town just builds the building for you. So like that, which is like not even that much of a downside for your opponent, it was just really good for me because it just made it so that like the market now just like had wood in it again, and like his whole strategy of like squeezing me was like the town was like, we're sick of capitalism, we just want to like have a supply of this stuff.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And they built themselves, which I think was nice because it came as a surprise. The way that these little decks of cards work is that like a lot of the information is hidden on them as you like kind of like go through them, and so it was this one time we were like, oh, like there was this big like cross symbol on the thing rather than a number to show you how much it cost. We were like, what does that mean? And we looked in the rule book and we were like, oh, the town, it's gone on strike, they're annoyed at you, they've just done their own thing. And I was like, oh cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
I also just wanted to briefly touch on how good the production for this game is. it doesn't come across in pictures, but the board is covered in this like gentle silver foil effect. So it kind of sells this town being like, you know, the city of silver, and there's all this like nice little foiling and like shiny stuff. But also, I'm going to send you a picture of what the wooden components for this game look like, and you will go, Thomas Brewster, shutupandsitdown.com, that is not a wooden component. And I will say, Emily, we're living in the future.
Oh, it's the one of those 3D printed wooden ones, is it? I've heard about this.
It's some freak wood. It's like, it looks like a miniature, but it's made of wood.
Sorry, Thomas Brewster, shutupandsitdown.com, that's not wood component.
It looks really cool. Like, the fact that there is just all of these, like, they look like miniatures, they're super detailed, they're really pleasing to hold and place. They're really good. Like, the production for this game, it's just off the chain.
I like the colors, too.
Oh, yeah. I love a game with some really good player colors, and this one nails those, like, slightly pastel-y, kind of, like, washed-out colors rather than... Like, there is nothing uglier to me in a game than, like, default red cube, default blue cube, default yellow cube. Like, everyone knows those colors. Yeah. I want those, like, gentle shades.
Yeah, I think the way that you've been describing it makes it seem like it's a lot, like, uglier and, you know, with the beige games that you often talk about. But, like, it's pretty. I like looking at it.
And, you know, there's, like, space in my life for a lot of beige games.
Yeah.
But, you know, occasionally it's nice having one where the production looks as good as this. Like, look at this card as well. Like, the cards, I'll put these in the podcast thumbnail. The cards have some really, like, charming, like, poppy color on them that I just think
nice.
It's really nice and detailed and gribbly. Like, it's good. It's just really good. The production is delightful. So it's ticking a lot of boxes, Kutnohora Sea of Silver. I might come back to this. I might play it again. And I might report back on whether this game holds up over multiple plays. Because I want it to, you know?
Yeah, I really like the look of it. Thank you for telling me about it, Tom.
No worries. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk all about Kutnohora City of Silver and the positive effects that mining will have on your body. And that's all the main games we're going to talk about on this episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. But before we end this, I want to tell you all about a little game. You might not have heard about it. You might not have known much about this goddamn board game. I'm going to talk about Dune Imperium again. We did a video review of this, me and Matt, on the site that should be up by the time that you are listening to this podcast, where we heartily recommended it, because we've always recommended Dune Imperium, Emily. There's never been a point in history where I did not like Dune Imperium. There's never been a time where I said that Dune Imperium was a bad game.
This is the only video that's ever existed on Shut Up and Sit Down.
Correct. God, what a power move if I deleted the old Dune Imperium video and fully just like completely whitewashed my... Yeah, exactly. I thought you didn't know. I've always liked this game.
Always.
I'm a Dune Imperium head now. I've fully come round on this game being pretty spicy and pretty good. And I think, Emily, we should do a little stream or something where I introduce you to this game, because it's really good. I was bowled away by how much I have liked playing this game on a physical table in a physical space. And I really like the app version as well. The app version is pretty good. And I think by the time you listen to this podcast as well, I think the app version, like, it was on Steam and now it might be on phones as well. Crazy. Whoa. We're truly living in the age of Dune.
It sounds like it's going to take over your life.
But quite possibly will. I'm addicted to many small games at the moment, and this is about to become one in that cluster, and everyone's going to just hate me for banging on about it. But if you have not heard of Dune Imperium, if you do not know what it is, or if you do know what it is and you want to hear us ramble about it,
for the first
check
time.
Out that video review. It's going to be, yeah, for the first time, for the first time ever in Shut Up and Sit Down history, we'll have a video review for Dune Imperium out on the site. I think it's really funny. It's got a bit, Emily, it's got a bit where I crush a tiny house with me inside of it. It's got a bit where there's a reference pair made out of sand. I'm really making a rod for my own back here, because I've not filmed either of those bits yet.
No, it's more like, why are you telling me about this? I've already seen it. This video's already come out.
Correct.
Why are you acting like I don't know this? I loved the sand pair.
You've watched it and you loved it, right? Yeah, you loved the whole video.
It was
the best
good.
Thing we've ever done.
The best thing you've ever done. First time you've ever done it. Great, great, great.
We'll have some more... I was going to say we'll have more coverage on Dune Imperium for you soon. I'm just so used to saying that because I've known this video is coming. But now, obviously, it's already out. Go and watch it. Have a nice time.
But we'll stream it and we'll have more coverage. We'll cover it to bits.
Correct. We'll cover it to bits.
We'll cover it
so much that you're going to be sick of Dune Imperium.
It's going to be suffocated. We're going to cover it.
drowned in sand. Oh, and you know what, Emily?
I should plug our smorgasbord of bonus bits that's coming out this month. If you are a donor to Shut Up and Sit Down, we have not one, not two, but three delightful, tasty bonus bits.
That's too many, Tom. Are you sure?
It's tons. I am sure.
Are you sure we can give them that many bits?
Should we not ration out the bits in a more sensible way? Feeding the bits once per month? No. They deserve all of the bits now.
They're supporting us and we care about them.
Matt's written a really lovely newsletter this month where he's just generally bowled over by how much it means to us having people support the site, even when the going gets tough, even when things are a little bit bumpy. And so if you support the site, this month, you got three bonus bits. You got a bonus bit where I steal a game from Quinn's collection after my victory in the Shut Up and Sit Down Predictions podcast, which was not contentious.
But what game, Tom?
Oh, you got to be a bonus donor to find out.
I'm going to support. Where do I go?
Go to patreon.com/shutupandsitdown or www.shutupandsitdown.com/donate. And you can see that. You can see, and as well as that, you can hear a podcast where me and Matt talk about Scavenger's Reign, a game and a TV show that greatly sort of inspired us during our Earthborn Rangers review process. We were watching those, consuming them, getting into the world. I got a tattoo of Rain World recently. That's how much that game means to me.
I've been playing Rain World because you got the tattoo.
Have you?
Yes. I thought it must be pretty exciting and good if he's gotten a tattoo about it. So I bought it and I've been playing it.
Have you been enjoying it?
I've really been enjoying it, Tom.
Oh, that's so good.
I'm excited to see your video about it.
Oh, hell. I will make a video about it one day.
What? It's a bonus bit. Is it not a bonus bit?
It is not a bonus bit. It's me and Matt having a chat about Rain World and a chat about Scavenger's Reign on a podcast. Down the line, I'm going to make a full video about it. But the problem is that game means so much to me that I've started writing it and I just can't. I just can't, you know?
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah, that's
And true. That's hard. And then the final bonus bit, maybe most enticingly of all, is I'm going to share my first impressions of Arx, the latest Leader Games game. I've been playing a whole bunch of Arx.
I'm so jealous.
Is it good? Spoilers, yeah, it's so pretty jealous. Damn good. I'm sorry. You will get it one day, and you will be like, damn, this is a good game. You know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, but fondness does make the absence longer, as they say.
I've never heard that.
That's the end of the podcast.
I've literally never heard that. Is that a thing?